Who knows what Jay-Z, J.K. Rowling, Bill Gates and Oprah Winfrey all have in common? Okay, I will tell you then. They have all overcome failure in one shape or form to go on to gain success in their respective careers. Welcome to My Perfect Failure. Join us as we delve into the world of our perfect failures. We will interview, explore, and discuss how our perfect failures can lead us to success. Join us and tune in.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of My Perfect Failure. Today, I'm super excited because we have another amazing, fantastic guest for you. So, my guest today has built and sold 12 businesses in biotech, transitech, and agtech, and martech. He is a Forbes book author and contributor and has been featured and quoted in publications from Fortune Entrepreneur, The New Yorker, Observer, and Thrive Global. As a founder at Boss Capital Partners, he co-leads a global investment syndicate that focuses on Series C that partner operational expertise and guidance and achieve rewarding capital efficient outcomes. The most recent success story is Delaroc, which has been acquired by Cubic Transportation for $48 million in just under 3 years. In initial investment as a result of implementing his business operating support system. So a very, 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 very warm welcome to My Perfect Failure, Gregory Shepherd. How are you, Gregory?
Hi. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And good morning and good afternoon and good evening to everybody.
Yes, yes. So I super, 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 super shrink wrapped your bio just to get the essence of who you are and some of the things that you've done in your career to date. There's a lot more to go in there. So what I will do, I will leave your website so everybody can dig in and get the essence of who you are and all the wonderful things that you've done and are currently doing. Yeah, I'm super excited.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm excited too. I can cover like a few things about my bio to kick off just so
That'd
people have that.
Yeah, like,
do you want me to do that?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And we can just get that over with. I don't want to talk about myself too much, but we could just get it over with.
Absolutely. So I guess where I was keen to cover initially, if this works for you. So just for everybody listening, you probably looked at the title of this episode. So it's Startup Success Blueprint with Gregory. So he's done amazing things today, but kind of like the cards weren't really stacked in your favor. So I'm sitting with you now, talking to you now, 12 exits and counting. But most people that come from a difficult or challenging background potentially don't have 12 exits. I guess. For myself, it'd be lovely to capture a little bit of your background so people can get the essence of where you come from.
Yeah, I can tell you that. I'll start with this. I have autism, dyslexia, level 5 dyslexia, which is really extreme. And I also have synesthesia and I'm a savant. You know, the autism comes with 7 neurodivergent conditions, processing disorders, sensory. There's a lot of different things. It's all on my website. But I had also no money. My parents moved out of the city and bought some property in the mountains. And we lived on the land in tents while we built our house. And then because school was so difficult for me being in special ed, I went to like 5 different high schools, and then I barely graduated from high school. And then I worked really, really hard and very methodically and logically until I was able to build and sell, you know, 12 companies, a bunch of investments, did a TED talk. There's 4 private equity awards for transactions between 250 and a billion, 2 companies to eBay. Then I went into politics and worked as a congressional chairman for congressional candidates, trying to help with opportunity equality. Met Barack Obama twice, then went into learning why, when, and how founders fail, which is the topic of your show, right? So I wanted to understand why, when, and how founders are failing so that I could actually contribute to income and wealth opportunity, and also help with the environmental challenges that we have in the world today.
As you were describing background and some of the lots of challenges that you've had to overcome, I'm just intrigued by your mindset, by your ability to turn those, I'm not sure handicap's the right word, but challenges that were clearly there. You've referenced them. What did it take for you to kind of almost reframe or to kind of press that go button where you didn't let the challenges that you referenced weigh you down?
I think, you know, everybody has tailwinds and headwinds. But what I think you have to realize is that you can aim your sails in a direction where your headwinds become tailwinds.
Okay.
So if you're doing things that are against the wind, then you need to turn directions. And everybody has things that they're really good at. Like, you know, I read at like a fourth grade level, you know, I have to have the computer read to me. If I go to a restaurant, my wife has to read menus to me, or I have a little tool that I put over things because everything's moving around. So what do? Well, I go out and find tools that help me read, or machinery. I've written this book and like 100 articles. So what do? Well, I use speech to text, and I have editors that help me with things. And so if you are handicapped and you have a disability, then you have crutches, or you have a cane to walk with if you're blind, or different tools are available to you. And this is the same thing for everybody like me or any other people, not just neurodivergent, but everybody in life, right? if you do what I like to do, which is every year I choose a challenge, something that I think is impossible. And then I take that challenge on. I do it. Like I've swam a marathon. I have asthma, so I swam a marathon. I've run a marathon. I cycled 525 miles. I cycled from San Francisco to LA down the coast. I mean, I've wrestled crocodiles. I've done bullfighting, all these things, base jump, climbed El Capitan, you know. This year I did a 30-day water fast where I didn't eat anything for 30 days. I just fasted with water. And every year I choose these things because once you do something that you think is impossible, if you do that thing again, you start to build up this psychological way of seeing the world where you're like, I can do things that even I think are impossible, and even other people think are impossible. And if I just keep at it, consistent persistency, and I just keep at it, you'd be surprised the things that you can accomplish. And you have to realize that the obstacles that you see are, you know, it's what you see when you take your mind off of the mission, when you take your mind off the goal, right? If you're focused on what you want to achieve, then you're not so caught up thinking about, you know, like causing your own problems, thinking about what you can't do, you know, or why can't you do it, or what is in your way of doing it. I think that's really important, is just realizing that, you know, that you are capable of more than you think you're capable of. The question is, are you willing to go through the pain and the blood, sweat, and tears to make it happen? It's not a matter of if you can make it happen. It's a matter of if you are willing to go through what it takes to make it happen.
There's lots of fascinating stuff there. So to get to that point where you've almost had a shift in mindset and the way that you approach things, did that come at a certain age for you, or was it maybe just an organic thing that was there from an early age?
I mean, you know, my mom said when I was born, I had 9 blood transfusions and I almost died. I did die a couple of times. My heart stopped, or I stopped bleeding. And then I spent a lot of time in the hospital. And when I was young and I couldn't go to PE because of asthma, and all these sort of things. And from a young age, you know, life was just difficult. And I think that something happens with the threshold, your high watermark of your ability to feel uncomfortable, not just physically, but emotionally feel uncomfortable, and then still keep pushing through it.
Yeah.
You know, I call it getting to the other side. So, you know, like I speak at events and I have autism, it's very difficult for me, but I've practiced the ability to be comfortable when I'm uncomfortable, to figure out ways to manage it. And I think that because of growing up the way I have grown up, and that I have put so much energy into overcoming the things that make you feel like uncomfortableness is your body's telling you to stop or something. Mm. Like, I'll give you an example. This year or next year, what I'm going to do is I'm going to cycle up a 14,000-foot mountain, 14,800-foot mountain. And it's the fourth hardest cycle climb in the world. And this morning I started training, and it was a small hill. And I started to go up the hill, I swear, probably like a 1K in, I was just sitting there breathing on the side of the road, just going, oh my God, what did I do? And the mountain, hill is still ahead of me. And then I would just cycle to the next light, and then to the next light, and then to the next light. And then incrementally, you can grow your ability to deal with uncomfortableness, and you can build your mindset that you can do these things. Mm. I think it's key to just believe in yourself. It sounds so cliche when people talk about it, but I think I don't mean just believe that you could do things on a surface level, but really believe like you've done it before.
Okay.
That you can do things.
Okay. Do you visualize?
100%.
Okay.
I get up every morning. I meditate 3 times a day.
Okay.
And I get up every morning, and the first thing I do is I get to the side of my bed and I say, today is going to be a great day, and I'm going to expect really wonderful things to happen. And I think about that for a minute. And then I meditate and I focus on being grateful for what I have and being grateful for the challenges that I have. I thank them and welcome
really,
them.
Really? Okay. I like that. Grateful for the challenges. I've not heard that one before.
Yeah, I'm grateful, and I thank them, because without them, I wouldn't be as strong. I think that people that don't have a lot of challenges in their life are missing out, and they should create them.
I'm writing that down. I get the feeling I'm going to be writing a lot.
I think that in life, there are 5 things. I call it a handful, so 1 thing for each finger, right? 5 things that you need to have in order to really live a full life. And definitely it's success in business.
Yeah.
That is focus, drive, enthusiasm, discipline, and optimism. And I think that a lot of people don't realize that when you're building a business, especially when it comes to failure is only failure if you don't keep going. Otherwise, everything in the world is made out of struggle to failure. If you want to lift weights, you struggle to failure. If you want to run, you struggle to failure. Plants break through concrete, cell by cell, struggle to failure. Evolution itself is struggle to failure. Mm. So failure is a process. It's not a destination. It's just part of the process. And, you know, I always tell founders, I'm like, you know, if you're failing, it doesn't make it go any faster if you stop. So if you're going through hell, just keep going.
Yeah.
You know, and you get to the other side, and then failure changes its form from failure to a process, to steps in the ladder that grows your life's the way you feel about your life and what you achieve.
Yeah, I love that. You're using lots of analogies that are very insightful, logical, inspirational. So thank you for sharing. So business came into play, and you've referenced, and I've referenced the handicaps that were clearly there, but business seemed a logical maybe career for you to go into business as an entrepreneur. Maybe if you can expand on how business entered your realm.
When I was little, when I was really little, I used to go to the beach and get driftwood, and I would cut coat hangers and put pine cone, the little things off pine cones and make driftwood that look like beer, birds, and I would sell them in front of the store. And then I started doing mistletoe during the Christmas. And then when I was in school, I sold Rubik's cubes. I would solve the Rubik's cubes and then sell them. Yeah. And I was importing them by the case.
Really? That's incredible.
Yeah. And then I caught rattlesnakes when we moved out of the city. I would take a stick and split it down the middle, and a green stick, it would want to close. So I'd come up behind them and trap them and then throw them in a feed sack and sell them as anti-venom and exotic pets. And then I sold pet rats. I mean, I was always doing something, livestock. I was always doing something to try and earn money, because we didn't have any money, right? So if I wanted to buy a car or clothes or things like that, I had to go out and get the money for myself. And so I kind of found that there are ways to make money outside of a job, because nobody would hire me, you know, because I couldn't even fill out an application. So I learned this process of like, okay, and I kind of picked up on this, right? And I was good at it. And then I started to see the world from a different perspective, sort of like, you know, like when I look at the startup ecosystem, I see like this tapestry of like you're flying over it, right? From 30,000 feet. And I see this tapestry of like, you know, of like, here's the mentors and here's the investors and here's the founders and here's all the software they need. And here's all these little pieces that are in here, you know, sort of like the way I look at people that are creating marketing collateral for themselves. I always categorize it into watch, listen, read, experience, right? And podcasts, what we're doing now is listen. So you do all of those different things. So you get into the ways that people digest content, and then you have the ability to sort of push your message out. And that's how I see the whole world and everything, you know, through, it's part of the, I think it's attributed to the synesthesia, shapes and colors, they mean things to me. And I see the world like that. So I think when I was young, I started to see it and sort of like almost groom this way of seeing things. And then as I got older and the more I started doing business, the more I was like, I know how to do, I can feel how to do this, and I can see how to do it. And then I just started getting better and better at it by learning really carefully from the past and always looking at what I could do in the future. So it's not just learning from the past. That's important. But it's also visualizing the future and applying what you learned from the past to what you see happening in the future.
Yeah. So the way that you visualize, is that to you, do you think that's an organic thing that you just visualize around the future? Or is it more of a learned practice for you, or maybe a combination of both?
I think it's part of my synesthesia. I think it's part of my diagnosis that when I look at the world when I look at everything, I see processes and systems and architecture, and that allows me to see the opportunities inside of there. Mm-hmm. You know, sort of like I can see these like little spaces where I'm like, ooh, there's something, or this could have been done this way, or, you know, this, because I think about things differently and I see things differently, I can see the world and all these little components different than other people. Mm. And that's an advantage for me. So what I mean to say is that my disadvantages are my advantages. And in fact, I think most people, they don't understand that the things that you're really good at are also the things that haunt you, and the things that you're not good at are the things that you should pay attention to, because you can make yourself better in those areas as well. And the combination, you get like an entourage effect.
Yeah. Okay. Amazing. Obviously, you've achieved a lot, and we spoke about that, and we'll probably touch upon some of those areas that where you had lots of success. But I was just thinking around the way that you can paint a picture, you can visualize, you can see where the gaps are, and you can move forward. I'm presuming that as part of your exits, you've worked with lots of colleagues that may have not had those perceptions and those insights that you have. Is it something that others can learn this? And because I imagine you're having to pull people along to kind of get the picture, get the idea, get where we're going, that maybe when they don't quite have those clarities of that clarity of thought.
There's two types of founders. There's visionary founders and there's subject matter expert founders.
Okay.
Visionary founders, they see things from 30,000 feet from the outside in. And subject matter expert founders see things from the inside out. So a visionary defines an opportunity or a business or something, and the subject matter refines that. And oftentimes, founders and co-founders come together really well because of that combination of things.
Okay.
But if you realize that you are a visionary, then you should be paying attention. That's what I mean by aiming your sales in the right direction. You should be paying attention to the vision of the big picture versus the depth and breadth of the finer picture, which is more of a subject matter expert. That's why you see like a visionary like Steve Jobs, who pays attention to this huge, massive ecosystem, and Wozniak, who is more of a subject matter expert inside of the depths, and seeing the detail. So, you know, like Elon Musk is a visionary, clearly, and the people that work within his structure, because everybody, you know, he doesn't do all this stuff, right? He has a whole team. Those people are the subject matter experts. And so you have to understand which one you are so you can leverage the thing that you're good at.
Okay. That makes sense. So if you're a visionary and you've got all these wonderful ideas, you've got to make sure that you've got people that are good on the subject matter so they can really perform those areas where it gives you the platform to plug the gaps and be the visionary, if that's kind of like what's within your DNA.
Yeah. And if you are a visionary type person, learning the depth of something, you should probably defer to somebody else. Yeah. And if you're a subject matter expert person, learning the expanse and a vision of broad view of things, probably you should work with somebody else. So nobody achieves things 100% by themselves. It's either a combination of the people that they've had in the past and the obstacles that they've had in the past with other people and other situations that have brought them there, or what's going on currently. But, you know, building a business is not a solo sport. It's a team sport. Even though you may start it off and you may be the tip of the spear, you still need other people involved. So if you understand where your strengths are and where your weaknesses are, then you can put other people in the areas where you're weak. And that's what I do. You know, that's what I do all the time. I mean, you know, it would be ridiculous for me to take credit for all the things I do when I lean on so many other tools and people to help me through my path.
Yeah, I can imagine. So is the critical piece, or one of the critical pieces, knowing where we excel and accepting that, and not trying to be me as an example. If I'm not a visionary, if I was to maybe join a business to be part of that team, to try and maybe execute that way, because it doesn't really fall within my strength.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a combination of making sure that you can execute in something that you enjoy. I think, you know, like, here's the thing that a lot of people don't realize: building a business is a painful, incredibly stressful, difficult process. I mean, it is really hard. And if you don't love what you're doing, and if you don't feel like you're actually doing something that's bigger than you, it's going to be really hard to get through that. So sort of like if you have kids and you think about how hard it is to raise kids and go through it, those kids are what helps you go through that, right? They're bigger than you and you go through that. But if you were going through all that stress and strain just for friends or somebody else, how many people abandon their siblings because of difficulties, or friends because of difficulties, because it's not bigger than them, but the kids are bigger than them. And then you get through it. And in fact, you enjoy it. You know, it's hard and all that stuff, but you enjoy it. And that's because you took on an endeavor that is bigger than you. And that is key in understanding how to go about building a business and understanding what's good. Just do something that you really are into. Like right now, I'm trying to help founders not fail and help with opportunity equality. And that's bigger than me. Yeah. So I'm willing to take the beating, you know, and the grit and all the stuff that goes with it, and the uncomfortable myth and the anxiety and the stress and all of the pressures and everything, because I'm doing something that's bigger than me.
Yeah.
I'm not worth it. But all the founders that are out there are.
Yeah, and they will benefit from it hugely.
Yeah.
Hugely. So I want to get into that in a second. What I wanted to ask you was around where, because you, so I get, there's a couple of questions that spring to mind. The first one I'm going to go with is 12 exits. When I read out your bio, I read out different verticals, different sectors. And sometimes when I speak to founders, they may stick to one vertical because that's what they know. You're rangy. You've got this lovely blend of different verticals. And I'm thinking, where does that come from? Because sometimes people go with what they know and stick to that, and they don't really go outside of that.
Well, it's interesting. When I was in the Navy, I joined the Navy, and I actually got kicked out of the Navy because I had asthma and I lied about that stuff. And, you know, autism and dyslexia and stuff. It was really, I was struggling, but it was a good thing. But when I was in there, I knew in order to be in business, which was my only path, I couldn't get a job. I was like, I have to make my own money. I need to know about two things, money, finance, and need to know about computers. So I went out and I started learning about those two things. So the first businesses that I built were in the banking industry, in finance. And then I moved into applied environmental biotechnology because I was trying to help with the environment, but way too early. Nobody cared back then. And then I went into software, which was technology when the internet came out. And I'd just been doing software ever since then. And so I was intentionally focused on the two areas that I needed to know in order to understand them. And then I fell in love with technology because you could build something out of vapor.
Yeah.
Like you just have some crazy idea that's just nothing. And then you can create something and then sell it for a lot of money and change things. It's amazing. Yeah. I mean, technology is amazing.
Yeah.
The fact that it's available is just mind blowing.
Yeah. So are you someone that likes to keep on learning and growing and developing? Because obviously you would have sold your first business many years ago. And when was your last exit? Was that the one that I mentioned earlier?
It was 2020.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a couple going on right now. But yeah, I mean, what I do is, I look at things that are going on and I look for things that are an inch wide, mile deep. In other words, if there's a big trend, like look at the big trend right now is AI.
Yeah.
And you look at the big trend before that, you have big data, you have analytics, you have, you know, I mean, you could go on and on and on and on. There's always some hot, sexy thing. FinTech was out there. Yeah. Biotech was out there for a while. There's always something. That's a mile wide, meaning it's shallow and wide. So if you imagine a inch wide, mile deep canyon, that canyon, as people start to fall into that canyon and start to get deployed, it starts to fill up. So it stretches width and becomes narrow. And that shallow canyon that's really wide becomes more and more visible to other people to jump in. And that's a very competitive place, right? And that's the hype that you see out there. But I look for an inch wide, mile deep. I look for things that everybody's missing, but go real deep.
Okay.
And those are the opportunities that I think are the most valuable ones. By one, you just get an immediate advantage by not having the competition. If you're building a business to sell to somebody else, let's say that there's five possible acquirers and you're in one of those busy spaces and there's 250 or 500 or 1,000 companies trying to be built to sell to those five acquirers. That's like musical chairs, right? Meaning somebody's going to be standing up. Not everybody's going to get a seat because there's only five acquirers out of 100 startups or 500 startups or 1,000 startups. That scenario doesn't exist when you have less competition in the first place.
Okay.
So you automatically increase your chances of being more successful just based on the competition barrier.
Okay. So it's clearly important that we spend time thinking about our idea, and then that can increase our opportunity for exit.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. Like, for example, if you're in a bull market, people buy companies and products and services to either make or save money. That's usually what it boils down to. So if you're in a bull market and you're selling people save money, it's the wrong choice. You sell people make money. If you're in a bear market, you sell people save money, not make money, because that's the mindset they have. So you have inch wide, mile deep, and then underneath that, you have that layer, right? And then underneath that layer, you have the way that you look at where are you going. When you're building a business, you have to know two things, where you are and where you're going, right? It's like a GPS.
Yeah.
And if you understand that, then you understand the destination, you have focus. Like building a business is like crossing the ocean. And if you don't have a North Star, you could go around forever and never hit land. But you have to have a destination in mind. So you have to understand that to start out with. So understanding who your acquirer are, in other words, where you're going is really important. Yeah. And where you are is really important.
Yeah.
So that's the next layer of that.
Okay. I listened to one of your, so just for everybody listening, watching, Gregory has amazing content out there. So I suggest I'll put as many links as I can on the show notes, but definitely search him on YouTube and other platforms. You'll find really, really cool content. But I was watching one of your videos, it was today and yesterday, and you talk about this very subject where you might meet founders and they may not have an exit strategy. So they've got their business, well, they've started their business, but there's no exit strategy. So you're really at pains to make sure that they are thinking when they start, what does their exit look like? What is the plan?
Yeah, I mean, it's really, really, really important. I mean, think about it. If I'm going to go from my house to your house and you give me directions with no address, I could drive around forever and never get there.
Yeah.
Right. So, but if you give me an address, it's the shortest way from one direction to another is a straight line. Right. So if you don't have an acquirer, you don't have an address, you don't know where you're going. You don't know how much they're going to pay. You don't know what their customers look like. Companies buy companies mainly for synergies, which is to make or save money. And the biggest one is make money. And that's because these big corporations already have customers and they're trying to buy other companies with products to sell to their customers. So not having an acquirer in mind when you start, it's just like not having a customer in mind when you build a product. Like it doesn't make any sense, right? That's all part of where you're going. When I say get from one place to another, understanding where you're going are the directions and the address. So these are the acquirers. These are the kind of companies they have, or the customers they have. These are the kind of companies that they bought in the past. This is the multiples they paid for those companies. And now you have some sort of a requirements document, right? Requirements on acquisition. And now you can build a company, purpose build a company to sell to an acquirer instead of randomly building a company and then somewhere along the way going, okay, and now I'm going to go out and find an acquirer. Most of them go out of business because of that.
Yeah.
So they're building a business. They get to a certain point and they go, okay, now I'm going to find an acquirer. Either all the acquirers are gone or they've built 50% of their customers don't match the acquirer's customers, which is what we call attachment rate. So they have a 50% attachment rate. And the acquirer is like, I don't care about those. I only care about the 50% that did. And now you have a lower acquisition. It doesn't make sense for the investors and the thing tanks, right? So it's really, really important to understand where you are and where you're going, and specifically where you're going. What are the requirements of the acquirer? So you can build to suit. Like, for example, you know, let's say that you go into a shop in London and you want to get a suit. You go in, you pick the fabric, they measure you. Everything is built for you, right? If you go in and you're going to buy a new house, the people that build houses are building houses suited for the people that are buying those houses, or cars. They're suited for an audience that are buying those cars. Customers aggregate and you're building for those aggregations. So if you're building for an acquirer, you're building for an aggregation of three to five different acquirers that have a description of what they want, and you're building for them. You can't do that. You know, if you've been building a company for 5 years and then you go, okay, now I'm going to go find an acquirer, that's so illogical. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. It's like building a product and never having a customer. And then as soon as you have them running off the assembly line or software out there ready to go after you spend all this money going, oh, okay, now we're going to go find customers. I mean, it's totally illogical.
So again, listen to some of your content. I wrote down a couple of notes. So you talk about innovation, then you talk about value creation and value capture. Can you, for me and people listening, watching, can you explain what the difference is between value creation and value capture?
Yeah. So there's three big layers in the stack. Okay. So there's the innovation layer. Value creation is where you're creating value. You're not capturing it. You're creating capital, but it's like your software, your company, your vision, and that's vision and product. And then it moves to value capture. Value is money. So now you start capturing money in your go-to-market out to the exit stage of the business. Underneath that are the different levels of the life cycle, which is vision and then product and then go-to-market and then standardization, optimization, growth, and exit, 7 layers. So those sit underneath the value capture and value creation. Value capture is the first 2 stages and the rest is under value creation. The other way around, value capture and value creation. And then underneath the 7 layers of the life cycle are these things, validation points. So these are the places where it's a micro view of the business. So you're validating the steps that lead up to the achievement of each stage of the life cycle. So for example, let's say you're on the vision stage of the life cycle, which is under the very beginning part, which is value creation, right? So you got value creation underneath, you have the vision level. And inside of there, you have to validate your vision before you can move on to product, which means you go out and you find an industry advisory board and a user advisory board. These are your future customers or your future acquirers, and you both of them. And you run it by them and you say, hey, what do you think of this? And if you were going to buy this business, how would this thing be built? And they say, yeah, I think it's a good idea. You can do it like this and you can do it. Like, you get some requirements for them. And then you go, okay, my vision is validated, right? So you have your North Star, which is who's your customer, who's your acquirer, why would they buy, how much would they pay, what is the ICP, the ideal customer profile, what is the persona of these people? You have a good package, and then you validate with them. And once you validate with them, then you're ready to move on to the product. And then you validate the product, and then you're ready to move on to go-to-market, and then you validate the go-to-market, and then you move on to standardization and so on. This is a logical pattern that is age old. I mean, I made it up, but it came out of so much data and it's really logical. It's the same thing with school.
Yeah.
You go from, the lower grades, the higher grades and to, university. And then you get out of university, you go for your undergrad and your grad, and you go through that process and you build on the knowledge that you had before. Right. And the validation and the confidence that you had before. So the life cycle is a journey from, hey, I have an idea, all the way out to I sold my company. And it's the same for every business every time. And there are reasons why they fail within that journey. And the book that I wrote, Startup Science, The Life Cycle, which comes out in September, is the book that it has all of it in the book. I studied it. I put it all in the book, The Life Cycle, Why They Fail, What You Need to Do. It's all in there. And that's why I wrote it, right? Was because I noticed, when I was interviewing all these founders, like 2,800 founders and 21, I mean, it was thousands, yeah. Universities, founders, accelerators, investors. I'm interviewing all these people and you ask them, and every single one came up with a different journey. And every single one had different definitions for things and all this stuff. And I'm like, well, no wonder everybody's failing. Right. If everybody went through school in a disorganized way like that, they would fail too.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's impossible. So there's a structure here that already exists in the universe. And it happens from when we are a child and we grow up. It happens in education. It happens in everything. Right. And that process is something that needs to be in startups. And that's what I set out to do with the book, is to set that out. And then started the school, startupscience.io, the school, to give away this education to founders so that I can help them and foster them through the process, right? So it's like a really, really beautiful way to sort of help people out through something they've never done before. Like if you're going to go on holiday, right? You already have a destination. You know where you're going. You know how much it's going to cost. You know how long you're going to be gone. You know how many nights you're going to be there. So you pack the right stuff. You know what the weather is going to be like, so on and so forth, the activities you're going to do. Why is building a business any different? Like, you don't just leave your house with your phone and go on holiday for a month or a couple of weeks, right? You have, you know where you're going, what you're going to be doing, what you need, It's the same logic.
Do you think with businesses, particularly for startups and founders, that we is it we just don't know the process, we don't do the homework, or we complicate the process, or could it be either or?
I think a lot of times the people that are giving advice complicate the process. I think that the process itself, the disorganization and fragmentation of the early stage startup situation itself, makes it way more complicated than it actually is. I think that everybody's different opinions on facts. Yeah. I mean, you're entitled to your opinion, but you're not entitled to facts. And, you know, people out there are throwing out things as if they are facts, but they're really just their opinions. You know, the way things are called or whether they should raise money. There's no logical, you know, algorithmic process to understanding how to build a business in early stage. But that's because it's not because it's impossible. Mm-hmm. It's totally possible. I'm doing it right now. It's impossible as long as nobody's paying attention and really focusing on it, right? And considering all the data. It's an immense project. This thing I'm working on to try to help with founder failure is a monster project, but that doesn't mean it's impossible. Just like we were talking about at the early part of this conversation, right? You can do the impossible things. You can fix things.
Yeah. Well, you're incredibly inspiring. So tell us more about this project that you started way back. Is it live now? Can people access it now?
Totally. You can go to gregoryshepherd.com. So that's GregorySheppard. .com, and then you click on Visionaries and it's free. Just sign up. And then the courses are in there. I mean, everything's in there. And, you know, we power like a whole bunch of major universities, Harvard, MIT, Stanford, you know, and we're moving out to the UK and into Europe and Israel and Africa and Asia, Japan. You know, it's all over the world now. Wow. And it's, you know, we have tens of thousands of founders in there at any one time. And I've lost track of how many are in there, but we're learning from these founders to make it better and better and better so that we can really help. I mean, look at the data, right? So here's the data. According to University World News, 33% of people that used to be going after advanced degrees are not, but 28% are going after founders to be entrepreneurs. So you already see a shift of people moving away from advanced degrees into entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
In the Western countries, like our countries, our export is entrepreneurship. Mm. There are other countries like China that make things, right? But we come up with the ideas and the things that they make.
Yeah.
So the United States, Canada, you know, Australia, you know, certain part, Mexico Israel is doing really well. The UK, a lot of areas all over Europe are, you know, this is the generation, the age of the startup. And the new frontier is early stage. Like, you know, if you look at, you know, all over the world, where is the new frontier? Where is the new untouched area to take advantage of? That's early stage in startups. Later stage has already been absorbed. I mean, look at this big downturn that we had. That's from later stage barbecuing and going crazy over the money that happens pre or post A round, right? That's chewed up and commoditized. There's not a lot of opportunity there. So what's left? Early stage. That's why I'm focused on it. And the reason why it's left is because it's broken.
Yeah.
You know, it's a fixer upper.
And that's what we need, fixer uppers for all the founders out there that exist now, but also the people that are talking about and thinking about finding their businesses. Conscious of time, so we'll wrap up shortly. But so for founders out there that want to delve into the platform, essentially it's an ecosystem. So everything that they need, they can find within this platform.
Yeah. I mean, it's not just the education. We have tools in there. We have 180,000 investors that can be matched up with you.
Yeah.
We can do your market sizing, your TAM, SAM, SOM in there. We're building valuation, cap table management. There's every startup assistance program in the world is listed there. Events, pitch events, innovation programs, visa programs. I mean, it is the whole startup ecosystem in one place everywhere in the world. You can get grants in there. You can hire grant writers in there. I mean, the idea was to give them the education plus the dilutive funding and non-dilutive funding, and then power universities, accelerators, incubators, what we call SAPs or startup assistance programs, to offer their people the stuff that is repeating so that they can spend all of their energy and time focusing on the stuff that isn't repetitive. If everybody is doing market sizing the same way, why is an accelerator, incubator, whatever, startup assistance program focusing on that? You can teach them that in a platform. What you need to teach them are the outliers, the areas where they need to, you know, where they need help. So inside of there, we also have the ability to talk to mentors. You can talk to investors. You know, I mean, it's always going to be under development, and we've been at it now for almost 4 years.
Yeah.
But we have I mean, it's better than anything else that's out there, but it's a long way.
Well, from I've not heard of anything out there remotely as an ecosystem like this that has so much depth to it and so much that founders desperately need and we can really help them achieve their objectives and also not go down the wrong lane. You go down the wrong road and it can destroy the project. It can, I guess, destroy us as individuals. So it's amazing that you've got this ecosystem here. And I get to your point, I guess it's always going to be evolving because you're always going to get new data from people that use it. You're going to get these new insights. So I imagine it will always be evolving and updating.
Oh yeah, it's always changing because like when I started the project to learn how, when, and why founders fail. And when I started that, it was 2016, and I thought it was going to be like a year. Really? It's still going.
Really?
And it's because it's changing all the time.
Yeah.
I end the year out. I look at all the data. I'm like, oh, okay, this is great. This is great. And then I break it down in the first 6 months or even the first 3 months in some cases. I'm looking at the data. I'm like, wait a minute. This isn't the same. So it's not a set it and forget it sort of way of seeing things.
Yeah.
Right. Everything is evolving constantly. That is the nature. It's what makes it so exciting and freaking awesome. You know,
I'm excited. And I'm excited by, I've had a sneak preview of it because you showed me it when we spoke previously and it's beyond comprehension. So it is amazing. So I'm excited, not just for me, actually, I'm excited for everybody that's using it, that will use it. And also, because I know that it's going to make a huge difference to people's ability to be successful when they have an amazing idea where they want to make a difference. And actually now they've got a real genuine opportunity to achieve those objectives with clarity. I'm sure they still have headaches, but those headaches will be reduced to logical headaches as opposed to maybe ones where
Or at least you're solving like the stuff that everybody is doing wrong. Here's the vision, right? Let's say you're going to work every day and you're driving and you drive down an intersection. And when you drive through that, there's a pothole. And every single day you hit that pothole and get a flat tire and mess up your suspension.
Yeah.
And this happens for like 30 years.
Yeah.
At what point is somebody going to be like, we need to go around this, fix the hole, there has to be another route. That's what I'm talking about. And what I'm trying to teach people with the research and the book and the classes are where the potholes are.
Yeah.
Like you don't have to hit them. So I'm showing them where they are and I'm showing them path around, over, through, some way that they can get over it without ruining their business. That pothole is always in the same place at the same intersection. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You just have to know where it is.
Yeah, and just I'm thinking, I've got two more questions. I'm going to let you go because I know you've got a meeting coming up. So I'm thinking for everybody involved in the ecosystem, it's probably serving them because everybody that's in the ecosystem, founders, investors, mentors, everybody that's there, regardless of what stage you're at, if you're doing these core things effectively, it's going to make the whole process, particularly for people that are interconnecting, are going to work with one another a lot smoother.
Yeah. I mean, I think that if everybody stays, if everybody goes through the same pattern, the same process, then the data that we learn about that process becomes better and more refined.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like evolution is the process of something growing, hitting problems and then evolving, you know, adapting, right? So startups is a process of, you know, running into things and adapting. Well, the process of adaption is faster if the circumstances are the same. So if people are doing things differently every single time, meaning the life cycle, then naturally it's an unsolvable puzzle because everybody's doing it differently.
Yeah.
But if everybody does it, if everybody goes to work the same way, they hit that same pothole. If people go a different way, they don't hit the same pothole. So let's get everybody going the same way, learn, adapt, and then we can do another route, and then learn and adapt and do another route. And so that's what I studied. And that's what I'm trying to tell people is that it's just like, it's the definition of insanity, according to Einstein, right? Doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results. That's what's happening. And the results are the same. Like 30 years of 90% failure. I mean, that at what point are we going to start thinking about
depressing, isn't it? Depressing.
Yeah, it's like depressing. Frustrating. You know, you're like, this doesn't need to happen. Yeah. It's insanity.
Yeah, particularly when, they just don't have these insights. So I'm super delighted that you put this platform together. So where can people find you, Greg? I think you've just said, but maybe if you can reference that again, where best place for everybody to find you.
The gregoryshepherd.com is the website that you can go to. And then under there is visionaries, and you can get a hold of me there. And all my social media stuff is on gregoryshepherd.com. And then Startup Science is the platform. And you can sign up there also as a founder, but that's really meant for the people that we power, like the universities and stuff.
Okay, lovely. Okay, wonderful. Well, I'll put everything on the show notes, so nice and easy for people to find you, sign up, follow you on social media. And my last question is, I don't know, normally I give people a heads up on this, but I'm not sure if I have for you, so apologies if I haven't. So I always ask everybody at the end of the episode, recurring question, so if you could invite three inspirational people for dinner, they can be alive or they can be past, who might you invite?
Einstein, Barack Obama, I love that man. I've met him twice. I wish I could talk to him more. And Nelson Mandela.
Oh, wow. Well, that would be...
I mean, I would add Gandhi on there if I could.
Yeah. Okay. we'll do another conversation, and you can have another three.
Okay, good.
It'd be lovely to talk about when your book comes out. So, Gregory, this has been amazing. I feel that I could talk to you forever, and I feel that this conversation pretty much could be three times as long as it is, because there's so much that you've done. There's so much that I would love to ask you, but hopefully we can have more conversations. But thank you so much for your time today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much. Namaste. Have a really good day. And thank you for anybody that's listening. I really hope I was able to help you.
No, I'm sure. And I'm excited for people to join the platform, but also put a lot of the insights that you've raised today into practice, because that's really what we want. We're all about then learning from setbacks and failures and really using those as opportunity.
Thank you. I hope you have a great day.
Well, and you. And thank you, everybody, for tuning into this episode of My Perfect Failure. We're always looking to grow the show. So please do share this episode far and wide, particularly if you know founders, entrepreneurs that are on a journey, and you know that they put blood, sweat, and tears into the project and you want them to succeed. So this will be the perfect episode for them. And your feedback is most welcome. We're keen to hear about the things you like and equally the things you don't like. So you can find me at paul@myperfectfailure.com, or you can find me via the feedback page on the website. So take care for now. Bye.
Thanks for listening to My Perfect Failure podcast. Be sure to visit www.myperfectfailure.com to join the conversation. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Google Play. Look out for our next episode.